Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 3, Episode 21 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and joining me here in the Cinematica studio, we have...
You know who we are. It's Simon here.
And Kaylee.
And we have a special guest reviewer here in the studio today. It's a long-time listener, first-time caller, Mike Dickerson, also known on Twitter as Adzabil. So, pleasure to have you here in the studio
with
welcome.
Us. Welcome.
You've got some fabulous hair, I have to say.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind.
Mike is going to help us review quite a few films. We've got a lot on our slate today. Whether Mike was unlucky enough to see Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand go on a guilt trip, we'll find out a little bit later on. I know that he saw the romantic comedy getting a new twist as newlyweds come under scrutiny in I Give It a Year. And also on the show this week, there's another version of Charles Dickens' Great Expectations that must make it into double figures, I'm pretty sure. But first, what is in the mailbag? Kaylee, you've been monitoring our social media performance, haven't you?
Yes, and I'm actually prepared this week.
Yay.
So we got another lovely letter from Hannah, who we mentioned on the show last week, and it took us a very long time to find her letter. But she said, this weekend I saw Amour, and I don't think I've ever been as deeply affected by a film as I was by this one. Haneke is a master of cinema. He crafts the story skillfully, without sentimentality or overt manipulation, so that the audience is totally and realistically invested by the time the third act packs its forceful punch. And she also saw No and gave us her two-word review, Positive Revolution.
Oh, yes, because No's been getting some sneaks prior to opening. And unfortunately, I was supposed to be at that No screening on Monday, and car trouble has actually seriously hampered my film viewing this weekend. Mike, you were there on Monday night?
I was smuggled in as a guest of the film festival, and with a Chilean who was able to give me a running commentary during and after and point out who the actual politicians who were playing fake politicians were. But it was I thought it was fantastic, and some amazing stuff done with the camera work to make it all look like really crappy 80s videos, so that the actual exerted video would blend in beautifully.
Right. Looking forward to seeing it, actually. It's one of those ones that got a big response at the film festival last year, and it's taken, nearly 8-9 months or something to work its way around. But, yeah, very much looking forward to that. Mm. And did Hannah actually tell us where her blog is?
Yes, I shared it on Twitter and on Facebook this week. So if you head to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/cinematicapodcast, there is a link to her film review page, which is awesome.
It is filmaswenowit.com, is that right?
Yes.
Yes, exists. Just for people who might want to be able to...
Go now.
Yeah, right, rather than wait till the end of the show. Yes, indeed. So thanks very much for that. Just another little piece of follow-up from last week's show. After the big sort of boost we gave to letterboxd.com, I have now set up a Cinematica letterboxd.com account where we'll be... dropping our two-word reviews on the letterboxd.com community. Yeah, two-word reviews from each of us, as well as links back to the podcast. So you'll be able to follow us and check out our diary, and we'll be following some of you in return. So maybe let us know if you have a letterboxd.com account where you are, so we can follow you in return.
Excellent. I got my own little piece of fan mail this week, just saying. One of the winners of a contest, the Oscars contest they had at Lighthouse Cinema, said, "Hi, Kaylee. First of all, I just want to say I'm a big fan of you and the show and never miss it. So thanks for an hour a week of fun." Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good, isn't it? That's great. It was such fun doing that Oscar.
That competition.
Ballot. It was really good, and interesting little trends that came out of it, and we'll definitely be doing it again next year.
Mm.
Yes. What a fun.
And after a very large debate with many Twitter users, Citizen Parable was coerced into going to see Silver Linings Playbook.
That's right. We've branched out, haven't we? On the show, we now do bespoke recommendations for people. So what I suggest you do is, and this is enormously successful, this one, we threw it out to the Twitter community. So if you don't know what to go and see, email us or tweet us or Facebook us. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And we will come up with a solution for
you. Like an agony hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, what sort of mood are you in today? Well, yeah, you go and see this film here. Mm. It would feel much better.
Yes. And so Citizen Parables, two-word review, or small review, of Silver Linings Playbook was enjoyable and great actors, but huge chicken out in the final act. Two-word review, Sweet Disorder.
Yep, nice work, nice work. So if we can get Citizen Parable to go to the movies maybe more than once a quarter, we can get some more of those two-word reviews. So excellent work from all of you. And we know that Citizen Parable has been to the movies this weekend. What have everyone else been going to see? We've got a top five?
We do. An interesting top five this week, actually.
Has there been an Oscar boost for the winners?
Yes. At number five, down from three, is Mount Zion. Up to four from eight, Silver Linings Playbook. Mm. There you go. Down to three from two, Beautiful Creatures. Down from one to two, A Good Day to Die Hard. And at number one this week, I Give It a Year.
Really?
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 Was that two? That was 2 weeks, though, wasn't it, for Die Hard?
Yes, that was 2 weeks. 2 weeks, 2 weeks at number one.
Mm.
I think, we're going to discuss I Give It a Year shortly. I think it has to do a lot with the cast. High expectations.
It's also been, the hell has been trailered out of it. So anybody who has been to the movies in the last couple of months, and pretty much on anything, hasn't it? It's been, you know, it'd be hard to not be aware of it.
But also, where's just the good kickback night out? Like, all the films that have been out lately have been quite sort of hard and
serious.
You know, serious. Mm. Lots of big dramas and serious. This is just a light romp, isn't it? But we can.
And so, in Argo won Best Picture. It's not playing anywhere anymore, is it? So to get an Oscar boost.
Oh, it is.
Or
is it places?
Still? Okay.
Yeah. It's probably still in the top 20.
Yes, it moved up from 20 to number 17 this week.
Mm. So it's still around the track.
Okay, so a bit of extra awareness there. So, you know, the people have hung on to it, the cinemas, the locations have hung on to it, getting a little bit of a boost.
Yeah, they could see the high fruit. And clever people.
Yeah, and Life of Pi was boosted into the top 10 from 12, and Lincoln up one from 9 to 8.
Okay, so those Oscars, they're probably worth going for then, you know.
Well, maybe, but then how much screen space do they get when it's all, there's lots of them vying for that spot versus how many more sessions would they get outside of it? You know, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, it is. And I noticed that from the release schedules, the US release schedules, the Weinstein Company have announced some of their titles for November, December next year, which basically means they're already sort of laying out their stall for their Oscar contenders. So, you know, the tactics are the same, pretty much. It's just that the time of year changes slightly. Mm. I think they go pre-Christmas.
Yeah, they do.
Pre-Christmas in the US.
Well, don't they have to have it in before Christmas?
It's got to have played somewhere publicly before 31st of December. Yeah. So sometimes, as we found out from that interview with Finola Dwyer and Quartet, they might just play them at one screening in Los Angeles to qualify, and then they hold it back for to wait and see what happens. But yeah, certainly that November, December, and in New Zealand, January, February makes it all the difference. It's noticeable to me that, you know, now that the Oscars and the award season is basically over, the film releases are much, much more commercial. Like, just looking at what was being released last week, it was broad comedies, wasn't it? And we're going
to... What do you mean? Jack the Giant Slayer and Return to Oz is in this week? What are you talking about?
I'm suggesting that perhaps they're not awards contenders, Simon.
The Sweeney?
Man, they could have raked it in at the Oscars.
So, let's look at one of the first of the list. And, oh, crumbs, I don't even know what want to go here, really. But I suppose we have to.
You know, Andy invented a new product, and he's going to travel door to door selling it.
Like Avon? No. Brushes or something?
No, not even close.
You seeing anyone?
Are you seeing anyone?
Please don't be disgusting. I thought you were seeing that girl with the exotic name.
Bethany? Dad died when I was 8 years old. You haven't been on one date since then.
This is you worrying about me. You don't have to because I'm fine.
Do you want to come on my trip with me, Mom?
You want to drive cross-country with me?
Yeah. No, it's, you know, we won't be gone long. It's only 8 days.
That's exactly how long the film felt. 8 days. Oh, boy. I think we'd have to say that... can I just get a quick survey of everybody around the table? Put your hands up if you saw it.
Hands down.
It was only me.
Chirping
crickets. Shotgun.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was lucky enough to see this at the Starlight Cinema in Taupo. Oh. And it was Thursday night, opening night. It was the 8:30 session, so the key session of the night, and I was alone in the cinema. So I can safely say that Barbara Streisand is not the box office force that she once was.
Was everyone else out on the lake, though, like water skiing?
Well, it was the Iron Man.
It was Iron Man weekend.
You know, everyone was out there being an Iron Man.
Everyone's too buff to sit in
this. Yes, right.
Iron Man is more of a Topol movie, I think.
Yeah, it will be. It was, I have to say, it would be a disappointing opening weekend for the particular distributor concerned. And the word of mouth is not going to be particularly strong on this film. This is one of those films that would have seemed like a good idea when it was pitched. You know, Seth Rogen, he's box office comedy gold. You know, he'll get that young demographic. Barbara Streisand has you know, this wonderful iconic reputation, and so put the two together. You know, Jewish mother, you know, there's the kernel of an idea behind this particular film, but the execution is just so sad and embarrassing, and it's just cringe making for all the wrong reasons. I watched it, and it seemed to me that everybody couldn't wait to get off screen in every shot they were in. It was hapless. And it's very rare, actually, that there's almost no redeeming quality in a film. Even the biggest, broadest comedies, you usually find something in there. But this is just so lame, unfortunately.
It's a shame, because I thought, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here for a film like a Guarding Tess, you know, or something that, you know, it's the younger, older
generational,
kind of dynamic.
Generational clash, yeah, exactly.
And the trailer sort of initially, when I saw the trailer months ago, I thought, you know, well, this looks like it could be a bit of fun and have some merit. So it's
there's two good minutes. There's two good minutes in that trailer, and that's all you need. I have to say, it was a disappointment, because Rogan, you know, is a very watchable screen presence, and of course Barbara Streisand's
an
icon.
He's everywhere. I must admit, you know, I think he's really kind of, you know, dominating the screen so much. I mean, even, you know, with Paul, I mean, did he have to be the voice in Paul? You know, I just he's everywhere. I don't know. I think that's part of the problem as well.
Maybe just saying yes to too many projects. Mm-hmm. A little bit more discretion from an agent point of view.
Does Barbara at least get to sing?
See, that was the other big disappointment, is that no
oh,
scene.
What?
Not even a cameo.
Not even a shower scene?
No, not even a cameo. Nothing over the closing credits. Well, I mean, I didn't stay to the very end of the closing credits, I have to say so, unless they snuck that in at the end. No.
You ran out before anything else could happen after the credits started.
Exactly. Lights go up. And that was, it was a disappointing experience all around. So you're going to want a two-word review from me here, aren't you?
Yep.
To round this one off. And it is utterly hapless. That is The Guilt Trip, Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand. So let's go a little bit further up the quality ladder. Fingers crossed.
Chloe's lovely. I don't know how you let her slip away.
No, she's too nice. She's too perfect.
Holy shit.
Guy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's just your type, really.
You're my type. I don't really go for good looking.
I need to be with you now.
I'm sorry, but that dove is getting awfully close to the ceiling fan.
I'm not giving up. From the minute I met you, I thought of nothing else.
That's kind, boring, warm. Put the radio on if you want warm. Been with kids. So was Michael Jackson.
So here's a romantic comedy from the people who produced Notting Hill and Four Weddings and a Funeral. So there's a bit of
Don't forget Bridget Jones's Diary.
Yep. Right. Yep. Okay. I'll do my best not to forget that. This is I Give It a Year, and this is where I get to go, phew, I haven't seen this one, so I'm going to throw this one.
I think we should throw this to Mike.
Yeah. You had an epic.
I had an epic. This was my first experience of the Roxy Cinema in Miramar, which is a lovely space with excellent sound and very comfy seats. And with 20 minutes to go of the movie, the DCP suffered a catastrophic failure, a meltdown, and the screen went black for half an hour. And all of us sat there, a dozen of us sat there patiently waiting, chatting and recalling interesting tidbits about the lives of the different actors, as you do. And then finally, after half an hour, the usher came in and said we could all have a refund or an extra ticket. And I felt at that moment, this was cinematic, I felt, yes, score. And then I realized, oh, damn, but I have to review it. And we all get, we all nevertheless all got up to go, and then the movie started again. And so we had to sit through the end.
So did they lose anybody? That's
only one walk. Only one walk out.
See, that's, I think pretty good, isn't it? That's a testament to, so some, everyone to something.
Everyone else was having a much better time than me, I have to say. They were definitely laughing at places where I was not.
Right.
So, you know, I'm.
And were you laughing at places that they weren't? Yeah.
Actually, sometimes a little bit. Yeah, that's true.
Tell us, what is the premise of
the premise this? Of the movie is that this is a romantic comedy that's unlike all those other romantic comedies like Love Actually and Notting Hill, but it's by the same people. And they've realized that the romantic comedy as a genre is basically hacked to death and desperately needs some new infusion, like make both the protagonists mentally ill, like Silver Linings Playbook, or make one of them a zombie or something.
Yeah.
You can see this is a sentiment. The premise here is that the folks actually are going to split up. This is a whole movie about them hating each other so much that they want to split up. And you would think that there would be a lovely resolution at the end where they realize each other's true depths and so forth. But you could, it's telegraphed very widely and by the director, say, saying this in public, that that isn't actually going to happen. So it's supposed to be a radical new turnaround of the premise. You've got a couple of your average working title folks, Rafe Spall and Rose Byrne, who are your middle-class London couple, and he's a hopeless dippy writer and an idiot, and she's a high-powered marketing person with no personality. And they're obviously bad for each other. And, you know, she has a sexy American client played by Simon Baker, who's, of course, Australian. So his
ANZ man.
Yeah. His American accent is a bit dodge. There's an ex-girlfriend to tempt the husband and so forth, and it cycles around like that.
And the ex-girlfriend is played by Anna Faris, right?
Who gets
not a line of dialogue in the trailer, right? So she,
and yet she is the most sympathetic and appealing character. Actually.
Really?
Oh, okay. Even though they make her frumpy and ugly, because people who do nice things are ugly and frumpy.
Oh, yes, so yes, the Bridget given, Jones thing.
She's
as well?
Given terrible, yeah. A terrible wig and an unsightly sort of facial mole that they've glued on there to make her less attractive. But she's still actually really cute.
But a heart of gold.
Yeah.
And everyone just keeps mentioning how she has no style all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty cruel. Okay, but that's part of it. Now, the jokes are your average gag, but there's Stephen Merchant, who is made something of in the trailer, I think. You know what? I hadn't seen the trailer before I went to this movie, despite what you said. I had no idea what I was getting myself in for until I picked up the little advertising phone and said, oh, from the producers of, Bridget Jones' Diary, good. But that was good that I didn't know that at the start. Stephen Merchant is appearing throughout as the hapless best friend with social disorder, who tells incredibly off-color jokes all the way through, which was funny in The Office maybe 10 years ago, and the comedy of embarrassment was quite fashionable. But this is a...
And for half an hour.
Yeah, that's right. This goes on through the movie. He keeps coming back, telling terrible, you know, making inappropriate gags about paedophilia or farting or something, and we're all supposed to go, oh, cringe, that's so funny, and everyone else of course was tittering away, and I was going, oh, please get me out of here.
Boy. And so as somebody else who perhaps needs a new agent after movie 43.
Now, the weird thing is, I thought, why is he in here? Is he sleeping with someone? Did he write the script? But apparently the part was written for him.
And I bet he would have ad-libbed a fair amount of this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this is their attempt to make it all new and edgy. There's quite a bit of... It's not a grandmother. Don't take your gran, because there's various shots of wedding tackle and so forth, and it's a bit more raunchy than you would expect.
Oh, is that right? Okay, well, yeah. Didn't realise that.
But the best thing about it is there's no Hugh Grant. Okay, but they actually make a comment about this early on when she's describing the honeymoon and da-da-da-da. She says, it's all glorious and wonderful. They said, well, this isn't a Hugh Grant movie, so come on. And, of course, Hugh Grant doesn't appear in the entire movie, but...
But his shadow looms
large. Even, you know, that's true. Simon Baker has Hugh Grant's hairstyle. That made it into the film. But, you know, I was almost expecting this movie would be redeemed for me if in the last 20 minutes I hung on. If there was a cameo appearance by Hugh Grant to come in and save the day like a superhero, but he did not come in to save the movie, so...
Once again, people should be listening to us. Hollywood and Working Title should be listening to us, because we would have given you the tips that would have just pushed this over the edge. So, Kaylee, is it fair to say that you might be sort of somewhere around the target market for this? So what's your response?
It made me want to be single. It made me not want to get married. And even though I'm very happily in a relationship, it made me not want to be in a relationship for fear of this happening. I went into it with, you know, hoping. I know last week I was really pessimistic about it. So I was like, okay, maybe it won't. Maybe I'll be entertained. And I was sort of entertained, like, in little sprinkles. But at the end, I was really unsatisfied by it. And I was just like, no. Why does Rafe Spall keep letting me down?
Ah, just on the subject of Rafe Spall.
Sorry, not Rafe Spall.
Rafe Spall. Okay. Just because, like, I found out the other day that apparently he was not originally cast in Life of Pi. And that Tobey Maguire was supposed to play that part. And they shot the whole lot of that stuff with Tobey Maguire, and then they got into the editing room, and apparently everybody sat and watched it and went, why is Spider-Man? Tobey Maguire was too well known and too connected to that role to sort of disappear, and so they realised that they just had to go and shoot the whole lot again with somebody that nobody that didn't have that same familiarity. So
it was a good decision.
It was a good decision in the end, but it's kind of sad.
Saved with just a CGI beard or something.
It's funny how these things turn out, isn't it?
It is. So Rafe Spall, he's sort of hit and miss, isn't he?
I'd rather see him in another role with his Canadian accent and a slight lisp.
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Mm. It's interesting to note that Rose Byrne is also Australian. So Simon Baker, this is made much of that Simon Baker's playing an American and they make lots of American jokes, but he's actually an Australian. Rose Byrne's secretly Australian as well. I like to think of that's why they got together, as they were both in masquerade and could only admit their Australianness to each other in secret.
And does Anna Faris have an English accent in this, or is she playing an American?
No. She's American in this.
Oh, okay.
I was terrified because she cannot do accents well.
She pops up in the... I mean, you know, the stock standard comedies that she do, which are pretty...
She was in Scary Movie 1, 2, 3, and 4.
But she pops up in some of the interesting places sometimes.
Yeah. Mm. Movie 43.
One of the person sitting next to me told me that she was in the Friends episode where she has Monica and Chandler's twins.
See, this is maybe every film needs to just break down in the middle,
so that you can have educational. We had a nice chat. We shared lollies with each other,
intermission.
And Jaffa's in the box or in a bag?
No, I didn't have Jaffa's. No,
no.
Smarties.
Smarties aren't the same.
Not the same. Okay, so Si, is this one that that's come across your path? Have you?
Afraid not.
Okay. So no. you're
I'm going to abstain from this one.
Yeah, you don't have to come up with a two-word review because that's what happens now. Mike, your two-word reviews have been pretty sound for us in the past. Do you have two words to sum up I Give It a Year?
Without parole.
Well done.
I can't follow
we
that.
We can't. You see, we just make it look ordinary.
I'm going to contract out my two-word reviews from now on.
My two words is unfunny facelift.
Okay, let's hope that we're working our way up the quality scale. So after a little break for the news, we've got three more films to talk about. But it's time to find out what's been happening in the world of movies.
Thank you, Dan. That was a lovely dance. Do you do that every time you listen?
It's the hair, the dance, I rehearsal this stuff for radio.
Oh, wow. A week or so ago, we advised that the new Sylvester Stallone film, Bullet to the Head, wasn't going to get a New Zealand cinema release. Now we can announce that the new Schwarzenegger is going the same way.
What is going on in this world that we live in?
Madness.
Everything that we thought we knew.
Revolt. The Last Stand was directed by wonderful Korean director Kim Ji-woon, who made The Good, the Bad, and the Weird.
And if you haven't seen that, you should seek it out. The Good, the Bad, and the Weird is the most demented Korean spaghetti western that you've ever come across in your life.
I'm writing that down.
And is also responsible for I Saw the Devil. In slightly better news, Roadshow have also canned the new Gerard Butler romantic comedy Playing for Keeps.
Yeah,
so Dan breathes a sigh of relief.
Exactly. Every cloud has a silver lining.
The Canadian film industry held its Oscars on Sunday night, hosted by Martin Short. Woo. The first Canadian Screen Awards saw Kim Nyan.
Close enough.
Yeah. Warwitch sweep nearly all the big prizes, including Best Picture.
9 awards.
And you can see Warwitch at the French Film Festival. It has one more screening. If you haven't seen it already, it has one more screening on Thursday the 14th.
That's in one more screening in Wellington, but it's also working its way around the country, so that there will be opportunities. But so a big coup, actually, then, for the French Film Festival.
Mm. Where was I?
Sorry.
In non-Woolrich prizes, James Cromwell won Best Actor for Still Mine. Salman Rushdie won Best Adapted Screenplay for adapting his own novel, Midnight's Children. And Best Feature Documentary went to Sarah Polley's Stories We Tell.
Which is... fantastic.
Yes, and I think it has a New Zealand release. I'm not sure when.
Got a New Zealand distributor, but in terms of actual release patterns, whether it's going to be festival first or actually going to go straight to cinemas, we're not sure. But yes, there will be opportunities for New Zealand audiences to see Stories We Tell, which is really, it's heck of a good.
Yes, and speaking of even more exciting news, the clear superiority of cinema over television has been demonstrated once again with the arrival of Prime TV's Doctor Who on selected big screens around the country. The first two episodes of Season 6 will screen as a double feature at Event Cinemas nationwide on Thursday, March 14th, including Wellington's Embassy Theatre, which means that's two very important things I need to see on Thursday, the 14th of March.
I think this is a very interesting trend, isn't it? It's the first time that a television, that somebody's decided that actually the way you need to see this is with an audience, with a big screen. I just think it's a sign that cinema, better.
But they do it for kids' TV shows on Saturday or Sunday mornings at Readings. They play, I think it's Readings, they play the psychedelic kids' cartoon Adventure Time.
Do they?
Yes, I haven't gone to see it yet, but I think it would be amazing.
It is interesting because you imagine something like Game of Thrones. Yeah, on a big screen, with a big event sort of around it. Like a big
and I know that the Roxy in Wellington, they're not in their cinema auditoria, but in their upstairs bar, in the foyer that they've been playing Downton Abbey as it screens. So they basically just switch the television on, stick it on a projector, and then you sit there and you're having your cups of tea and what have you. So I think that the understanding that actually a communal event is important, that just sitting around at home watching TV by yourself isn't as much fun as sharing it with other people. I think that's a really good
thing. Unless those other people are talking.
Yeah.
You can't just go out and pause it and get a cup of tea or anything, though.
Go to the toilet, yeah.
No, but two episodes of Doctor Who, there'll be an interval, presumably.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for the news. Time to get serious. Pretty difficult actually grabbing some audio from a film that has absolutely no dialogue in it whatsoever, but you'll get the general gist of Samsara. That is part of the soundtrack for that particular film. And Samsara is from the people that brought you Baraka many years ago. It's probably 20 years ago.
Would it be that many?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a while. And Ron Frick, the director of Baraka and Samsara, was also one of the key creatives behind Koyaanis Kartsi even further ago. And so these sort of, how would you describe them? Epic travelogues, I guess, he's been involved in since the very beginning. And Baraka is a film that once seen, never forgotten. And it's taken, I mean, this one's taken five years at least to produce, with Ron Frick carrying his 70mm camera all over the world to some incredibly remote locations to get these incredible bits of footage. This is a film that is... it's about the world, isn't it, really? And the natural world and the human impact on the natural world and on our and on ourselves. And if you're familiar with those other films, then you'll have seen that this one's coming, and you'll want to pick up the latest sort of version of it. Mike, you saw Samsara. What did you make of it?
I was lucky enough to see it in the embassy on a really big screen, which is what I recommend. It takes the form of about 10, 15 seconds, 20 seconds shot, often panned or with fast motion or something, of some amazing, amazing thing with the most beautiful colours and cinematography imaginable, and then switches for 10, 15 seconds of something else and something else and something else and something else. So it goes from mountains and deserts and then Hurricane Katrina, and then we have crazy costumes, and then we have freeways, and we have freeways at night, then we have tattoos, and then we have robots and more deserts, and And the juxtaposition of all of these images is telling a series of short stories that's definitely broken into several segments. And all the way through is this constant soundtrack, which is sort of world music, Enya, New Age, trancey, a bit like that CD of the Chanting Monks that was big 20 years ago. And that sort of carries it together.
As well.
Yeah. So that's the that sounds horribly cheapening the way I describe it. That's fundamentally
pretty dismissive.
It's pretty dismissive. But the experience of it, and particularly seeing an early scene where the Tibetan monks are busy making a mandala by trickling tiny grains of sand in an intricate pattern. I mean, you zoom right in an inch away from the trickling sand, you can see the tiny grains drop and these intense colours, and it zooms out to fill the entire embassy wall with this beautiful intricate, and you go, whoa. Dude, so it's a bit like
it's trippy, isn't it?
It's very trippy. It's like taking drugs some ways.
Is it something you take young people to?
I was gonna ask that question myself. I think it could be. There are a number of sequences that will be quite distressing. For children, but the biggest reason you wouldn't want to take children to it is because they'll come out wanting to ask really difficult questions, like why. Why does that child have a pink gun? You know, like there's a shot of a family, a gun loving family, standing proudly in front of their gun closet, and the father has his automatic weapon, the mother has a pump. Oh no, the teenage boy has a pump action shotgun, and the teenage girl has her own gun, and it's pink. It's like Barbie pink, and so I mean that's just one little vignette of many. And there's a whole section on how food gets produced, for example, which is going to be quite distressing for
carnivores.
Although I was just hungry at the end of it, to be honest. Mm. I've long since
just wanted a nice good red.
Long since got over any squeamishness about how my food gets produced. But I imagine if it is a problem for you, that sequence will be quite troubling.
Right.
But it covers the modern world and the third world. And make some interesting points about what we believe, that whether it's religious belief, it's as strange on one side of the planet as it is on other sides, and body adornment, tattoos, etc. So there are a lot of parallels being drawn between.
What about the third world and west world and sort of extreme wealth and poverty and those sorts of aspects?
I think it covers that. There's some interesting sequences in created in Kenya where you see village life and mothers carrying babies around, and that's balanced with, I guess, the dehumanization of the Western world and factory work. One of the memorable sequences of Baraka years ago was watching people making VHS players in a factory in Japan. Well, that's moved now. Now we're in China doing that sort of stuff, and they're not making VHS players or even anything very technical. They're making irons and watching somebody putting together the pieces of something as prosaic as an iron on a conveyor belt all day, every day, and you're forced to confront the fact that actually this stuff doesn't happen by machines. It somebody has to do it, and what a miserable existence that must be. Mm. So there's a lot of challenging stuff in there. It's almost all just immaculately photographed, beautiful. The colours are extraordinary. Like every single one of these films, there comes a point where I think, okay, I've had enough now. I don't know if it necessarily needs to go on quite as long as it does, but it is extraordinary, I think.
Mm. It isn't terribly long, though, is it? It's about an hour and a half.
It's just over. It's about 100, I think. About 100 minutes.
But with no dialogue or story or plot of any kind. I mean,
you do have to concentrate quite hard on it. Mm. And also it's making some relatively subtle points about the connections between various things, and I do love the fact that it wraps itself up so beautifully at the end. It really it's an extraordinary work of art. I found myself thinking that this is almost as if this is what the Earth Curiosity rover would be sending back to people on Mars. It's like as it's wandering around, and imagine our contemporaries on Mars looking at it and going, what the what? Who are these people? It is. It does make Earth look like a very strange place indeed. You know. And I suppose if you take a step back at looking at all of our cultures, all of our belief systems, all of the ways that we live, they're kind of strange, really. Mm. So, Mike, do you have two words for us for Samsara?
The experience was a bit like paging through a huge stack of National Geographics, except all the photographs were films. So I would say cinematic geographic.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, excellent. Mine is really just, what the... There was every shot was like, really? That happens? So, Samsara, it's not playing terribly widely. I think it does deserve to be seen on a really big...
Yeah, I think absolutely, that's one of the factors in this, isn't it? It's just playing... I mean, it's just playing in one place in Wellington. I suspect it's the same in Auckland.
Yeah, but do seek it out. Mm. If this is... It is... I'm a big fan of non-narrative cinema, as you know. I'm getting a bit tired of the same old three-act structure.
Isn't it
is refreshing to see something that just washes over you. And, you know, I know that you're a little bit... you're a little bit sceptical of the music there, Mike, but I do...
I did like the music, but it was definitely of a particular genre, a very particular genre. And no, I did. I loved the experience. I really have to say, my mind was kind of blown at the end of it. And I think if you went as a party, and of course we can't advocate the ingestion of illegal drugs, but I think if half the party were to see it stoned and half not, then it would be really interesting to compare the experience.
That's the scientist in you coming out.
Yes. You just couldn't have a proper conversation.
No, it would be incommensurable. Yeah.
Okay, time to go to
sober one.
South London now.
He has killed, and he will kill again. This is our man, wanted for robbery across Switzerland, Italy and France.
How do you want to play this?
Very low key, no trouble.
Hey there, sweetheart.
Where is he? Where can I find him? There is one fact you're overlooking.
I think you've got the wrong man.
Oh, crikey. I actually had quite a long argument with somebody.
Dad, could I interrupt you there?
Yeah.
Could you do the whole review in that voice, please?
Yeah.
France.
Well,
must not kill again.
Ray Winston, what happened?
There are a couple of things I want to point out here. One is I had a long argument with a friend of mine on the weekend about whether the original TV series of The Sweeney was South London or East London. And
oh, well, that's a huge debate.
And it really doesn't...
We haven't got enough time for that today.
Very important.
You know, it really doesn't matter because it's fiction, isn't it? And but also, he was reminding me because, of course, Ray Winston was here to make The Tracker a couple of years ago,
yeah,
so
that's right.
Quite a few of my actor friends were acted with him in that film, and they pointed out to me that behind his back, not to his face, but behind his back, he was known as Ray Winstone. And yeah, you wouldn't get away with it.
No, I don't know where you're coming from, my friend. No. Let's just move right along.
But so this is a remake of the classic British television series The Sweeney from the 1970s, which was well known as being sort of as close to the edge as from in terms of violence as television got in those gritty 70s days. And because it was television, they had to make up their own swear words, which is not a factor that they had to deal with in this particular version of it. There's an enormous amount of totally legitimate gold-plated swearing in this version of The Sweeney. The Sweeney itself, the name is Cockney rhyming slang, isn't it? Because it comes from Sweeney Todd, which
Flying Squad,
exactly. Yeah. So there's going to be people who watch this film who just, I mean, won't understand that at all, or even what Cockney rhyming slang is. This is it for all of its links back to its original TV roots. Basically, this is a pretty standard English gritty working class crime thriller. Am I right? Ray Winstone and the rapper known as Plan B,
which is hilarious because that's another term for emergency contraception in Canada.
See, and this is why when you're choosing your rap name, you should check Wikipedia first.
Or Urban Dictionary.
Indeed. So, Kaylee, you know, I'm from the East End, so this is my manner. or was 25 years ago. Yeah. Anyway, you know, did this did this ring true to you? Did it have the air of authenticity, or was it?
It was a pretty authentic cop drama. Like, it was just, it was full on, like, fast cutting, really crazy loud music. So it almost, like, it was on the edge between, like, a contemporary film and, like, contemporary cop drama that you would see on TV. There was some really TV-esque elements and then some feature film elements, so it was a bit confusing.
It had moments where you thought that if they'd just taken a bit of a left turn, it might have actually been a decent sort of art house film like The Long Good Friday or one of those great English, the really classic English crime films. And yet it sort of looked over the edge and went, nah, not going to go there. We're just going to stay with the sort of normal commercial.
I'm sure that was a common topic of debate on set with Rowan Stone. Just, can we make a bit more arty? No, sorry, Ray.
I think one of the lines that sticks in my head is like, I think I found your weakness. Oh, no, you just found my glasses.
My glasses?
And it's so talking of accents, I think you could give Anna Faris a run for her money there.
I don't know how to sound like an overweight British man.
Did he get to stand in his togs with a fan? You
know,
no,
but he definitely, he definitely gets to strip down to his undies.
Yeah.
Right.
Boof.
You go, Ray.
And
you go.
So, yeah, so he definitely his sex symbolness remains unchallenged by the Sweeney. And I get the feeling that that this will have made a fair amount of money in the UK, and I would suggest that there's probably going to be a sequel.
I would say. No, I disagree. I reckon that.
Well, and also, speaking of good looks and strange accents and TV, one of the other stars is Damian Lewis, which many people know as the guy from Homeland.
And he's putting on an accent too, because he's from Eton.
I had to look up him
that
on...
That doesn't fit.
I had to look him up on YouTube, and I found
he's putting on a sort of London accent as well.
I found his Top Gear episode and had to watch it to find out what his accent really was, and it's so posh.
Yeah, yeah. And talking of Top Gear, I actually watched the episode of Top Gear where Jeremy Clarkson got to direct the final car chase, and it's actually quite amusing. Yeah. So you can get a chance
in the Sweeney. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about Top Gear, because I feel we raised the train too much.
I think we perhaps exhausted the Sweeney. I was expecting it to be actually. This is one of those things where anticipation isn't necessarily all that helpful. It wasn't as bad as I was expecting. It wasn't as lame as I was expecting. And there are some moments that there's a couple of scenes where Ray Winstone gets to do some proper acting.
But there's no connection, really, is there, to the Sweeney?
Not really. Just the names of the characters and I suppose it's the roughness. Like, it was the original Sweeney was pushing the envelope in its day.
See, I got visions of guys driving Cortinas with flares and, you know, sideburns. I mean, that's the Sweeney.
And they do bring back the theme music at the end for the closing credits. So there's a wee connection there. But other than that, no. It could just as easily be one of those situations where they found a script and gone, you know, we'd like to make this script, but it's not quite commercial enough. Why don't we just make it like that Die Hard film, which I'm pretty sure didn't start out life as a Die Hard film. They've just decided to sort of slap a wrapper on it, and you know, it's not tragic, and I would imagine that there'll be audiences that that will get exactly what they want out of it. So I have
two words.
Kaylee, do you want to go first?
Yeah, my two words are a reference to my favorite cop film, Hot Fuzz, Unstoppable Copper.
Right, my two words for the Sweeney: you're nicked.
It is the desire of the benefactor that he be brought up as a gentleman in London.
What do you think?
There are conditions, of course. The first is that the name of the benefactor remain a profound secret. The second being that you always retain the name
Pip.
He has come into a handsome fortune, and he has great expectations.
And after leaving no stone unturned, we finally found a film that Simon's seen.
There you go.
Great Expectations. Si, so you're going to be our Charles Dickens correspondent for the day.
Mm-hmm, that's me.
Yep. What did you make of it?
Well, look, I haven't I haven't seen Dickens, the previous versions. I haven't read it.
Have you not? Oh, no, so no. You
so
haven't
I,
seen,
I went into this completely
You haven't seen the Ethan Hawke version, which
no.
is actually really good.
Is it? Yeah, no, I didn't know. I haven't seen any of those. So I guess I haven't, you know, I just went in there cold. And
You had no expectations.
I had no expectations. And I was quietly sort of pleased. You know, I wouldn't say I was singing from the mountaintops and sort of like, you know, with massive euphoria, but I was actually relatively sort of pleased with it and came out of it, you know, rather charmed, I guess is what I'd say. Yeah.
Were you engaged with it? Did mm-hmm. you feel like you the characters sort of reached out and grabbed you?
They did, and I was really, you know, there was a few nice surprises in it, and that the chap out of Warhorse, I forgot his name now, but he was actually quite good, I thought. You know, I liked him in it, and I thought, well, this is a big step up for him from Warhorse, and he carries it off. And the young woman, Holiday Granger, who the young love interest in it, I felt, yeah, she was good, but a little bit too cold and sort of hard for me. But I guess that was the whole point, was that her heart was made of stone.
I imagine that's what the character would have been like in the
book.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that everyone really carried it off. I mean, Helen Bonham Carter was great.
I was going to say, it's the supporting cast that
Rob
really...
Yeah, Rob Fiennes really chews up the screen, and when he's on there, you know, it's really watchable. And so when it opens and you see this young boy on the sort of by the moors, whatever you want to call it, the I don't know what you call that area there, the sort
fens.
Of... The what?
The fens,
I The think. Fens, that's right, that's yeah. right. Out in the fens, it's a really sort of interesting part of the film. So, and visually, I thought, you know, beautiful to look at. It was a lovely, lovely film. So, yeah, I always question, you know, how these films kind of keep, you know, like they, how they keep sort of keeping up with the time, you know, like how they kind of stay relevant to younger people and so on. And but I think this film, it does that for me. I think,
well,
you know,
it's interesting you say that, because
like
the last version, they updated it and set it in modern day New York. And so that was, I guess, the approach that has been taken, is to say, well, look, we could grab the universal aspects of this story, of which there are, you know, many, and update it. But this one is very traditional, very sort of BBC looking.
It is, and it, you know, it knows what it's doing and it does it well, and all the actors know what they're doing. You know, like, there's no sort of question marks anywhere, and it's really tight and really well acted and really good to watch. So I am. And I liked, you know, I thought there were a couple of surprises in there with some of the actors, and they seemed to pull it off for me. So but like I say, I'm not schooled on Great Expectations. I haven't, you know, I haven't really done the history lessons on it. So I went in there quite cold, but really, I enjoyed it.
So from an audience point of view, you don't need to know the story. You don't need to be familiar with it.
Well, the only question mark for me is, you know, of people who've read it and seen it a number of times, is how this, you know, like how they'll be comparing, and they'll be sort of saying, well, actually, you know, like you said before, you know, that there was a better version, you know, X number of years ago. So, I mean, that may be the case, but for me, I thought it was great.
All right. Anybody else around the table wanting to yes, you young lady.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed it as well. Simon and I were at the same screening. But from what I've heard, it stayed quite close to the book. You do get a lot, like the whole story, because it is about one young man's life, like his whole life.
How long is it, by the way?
Oh, it's not terribly long, a couple of hours. You know, it's not. Okay, not, so it's not, it doesn't feel long either, which I think is a good result for the film.
Yeah, but I was also thinking, it's like, what if Ray Fiennes' character was replaced by Ray Winstone?
Oh, could easily.
Why go there?
It's not silly casting, to be honest.
No, it's great casting. Yeah. It's great. So, yes, very enjoyable. Very enjoyable.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, and this one actually opens around the country on Thursday, tomorrow as we're recording.
Yep.
And is that one getting a wide release? Are listeners going to have to seek it out?
I don't know. I don't think you'll have to seek it. You don't have to look too hard to go and see it. It'll be playing in a number of places. But it's an interesting part of it for me is when he goes to London and he is, you know, he's of great expectations and he's got this silent, you know, this hidden benefactor and all this wealth. But there's this... It's really well done how there's this sense of manipulation that's occurring to him and other sort of things that are happening in the film. And yet you can't quite tell where it's coming from. And I think that they really cover that, you know, it's quite smart how they do that in the film. And so yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, again, if you know what you're dealing with, then you'll pick up, you'll know that. But for me, I quite enjoyed that, and I quite enjoyed the way they did it.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
That's good. That's an important part of the book, is you're not actually supposed to know. You're supposed to be still guessing what's going on and what the source of all this is. So if they're able to really preserve that air of mystery in the film, that's wonderful.
I think because it's the lawyer played by Robbie Coltrane, who kind of is you know, he's sort of manipulating things. And at one point you think, well, is he, you know, he's manipulating these things for his own end, not because he's being instructed to do so, and what's his big picture and what's his plan. And so, yeah, I liked all of that. I thought it was quite intriguing.
Can I just say, it's also, I'm really looking forward to this, a pleasure to see Robbie Coltrane back on screen. There's an actor who we don't see enough of, really. I mean, apart from all those Harry Potter things, I don't think he's been all that busy, which is a bit of a shame. So, to sum up Great Expectations,
I'll just say it was Jeremy Irvine who plays the young man, and he is good.
Right. Yes, and the younger version of Pip is actually his younger brother.
Oh, fantastic.
Really?
That's cool.
Oh, that's so cute.
Cool. Mm. So, two words. Who wants to go first?
I'll go. Okay. Classy classic.
Oh, and I went with clean classic.
Oh,
you two, you went to the same screen. You've been comparing notes. Were you looking over its shoulder?
No.
Copying from the person sitting next to you?
I have notes on my screen.
I had it written on my wrist. You couldn't see it.
All right. That, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. Next week, Oz the Great and Powerful, the big Disney epic for this quarter, in 3D, digital 3D. So looking forward to that opening on Thursday. And we'll talk about that next week. All that and more, of course, in next week's exciting episode of New Zealand favorite movie podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget you can click subscribe in iTunes, and that means that your episodes will be downloaded automatically. We're still working on making sure that we're in every other avenue, for your Android devices. We want to make sure that you can do the same there.
And we still need to get, I think, a live image.
Yes, yeah.
We want to get filmed.
Like a webcam.
Like a webcam.
Yeah. I wore my nice shirt and everything.
I know.
You hair did. I'm
so disappointed.
I know. We've let you down too, haven't we? Well, I know. I'm just not.
It's coming. We will. And actually, so rest assured, we are working on
that iron. What have you got? Iron Ingmar Maiden? What does that say? Ingmar
Bergman.
Oh, no. See, the witty t-shirts just like don't show up on radio.
Yeah, you see.
Perhaps at the start of the show, you should just read out each other's t-shirts for the benefit of those listening at home.
We've been joined in the studio by Mike Dickerson, who is a long-time listener of the show and a Twitter follower of ours. So if you're a Twitter follower or a Facebook follower of ours, then get in touch with us, and maybe you too can be a guest reviewer. So Kaylee, how do people do that?
You can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle at CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on our website at cinematica.co.nz, and on Letterboxd as Cinematica.
Cinematica, that's right. This show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store, and we recommend you do. And we're going to leave you with some more music from the film Samsara. This is a song called Kothbiro by Ayub Ogada from Kenya. Well, this is one of the most amazing sequences in the film, actually. And this track is not on the Samsara soundtrack CD, so it took a bit of digging to actually track this one down. You can find this on his 1993 album, En Mana Kuoyo. We might actually drop a link to that in the show notes for people who can't understand my accent. Until next week, that's all from me.
Good night, everyone.
Good night from me.
And good night from me.
Thanks, Mike, for coming on.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Good.
love.